Bom dia, boa tarde! Welcome to another episode of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. I'm your guest host, John Neves, back here again to talk about my favorite subject, your favorite subject. That is, of course, Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football, whatever word you use in your part of the world. Episode 175. Here we are in the middle of June. Obviously, the domestic football soccer season's finished, but we do have international football coming up, and I'll be previewing the Portugal-Bosnia match, which will take place on Saturday, and Portugal away match at Iceland and Reykjavik on Tuesday in part two of this episode. We're also going to do quite a bit of talking about a lot of manager changes going on in the first and second division in Portugal. Wanted to talk a little bit about that. Going to also talk my big three report. Of course, it's the summer, and if it's the summer, that must mean transfer rumors, because so many Portuguese players are so much wanted to be bought by big clubs in Europe. So I'll give you some of my thoughts on some of the things that have been rumored, some of the things that have happened. And I'm also not just talking about the big three. We'll talk about some big moves as well that Braga made this week. So I'm really looking forward to talking about that, as well as a little bit of the player abroad report. Before I get started, I want to tell a quick story. I had an opportunity this past weekend. Of course, it was Dia de Portugal weekend, and I hope if you're listening, you got an opportunity to enjoy it this past weekend. And I went... you know, I don't live in a Portuguese community, so I went this past Saturday down to, of course, one of the highly recognized Portuguese communities in the Northeast U.S., and that is, of course, Newark, New Jersey. And a terrific evening spent via the Portugal. It's like a family reunion. If you're Portuguese, you know what I'm talking about, a chance to see old friends, the food. You know, I had my only disappointment on Saturday was that I couldn't believe that I spent $20 on a half a bag of frituras. Don't get me wrong, they were so good. No doubt about it, I don't deny that, but just terribly expensive in my opinion. But unfortunately, I think a lot of us in different parts of the world, we're living in very expensive times. It's just the way the world works now. But had a fantastic time. And one of the things that I really enjoyed was there's a group, a Portuguese group, female group. It's been around for over 20 years, very famous in Portugal, called Sons da Terra. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And they came to Newark, not just them, there were other Portuguese artists that came to perform. Newark this year, Ferry Street, you know, usually it's just those first two blocks after Penn Station, the train station, where they have all the festivities and the food selling. This year they extended it like the old days down Ferry Street. So that was nice, and I had the opportunity to listen to Sons da Terra. One of their famous songs that I love is Portuguesa Bonita, which is what they sang, and I put that actually out on social media if you want to check that out. And it's such a beautiful song, and actually, they're actually the original artist of this song is a pop artist in Portugal named José Cid, C-I-D. And if you ever want to see Portuguese rock back in the 80s, and to see what life was like back in the 80s with Portuguese music, Google or go on YouTube and Google, search José C-I-D, Cid, Portuguesa Bonita. And you're going to see a guy in the Don Johnson Miami Vice look, wearing the white jacket, sunglasses, even though he's recording this video indoors, with this like really ugly backdrop. But that was typical Portuguese music back in the 80s, and there's so much of it was so good. And I hope one day, I think he still performs, I get to see José Cid, because that's one of my favorite songs when you talk about Portuguese, is of course Portuguesa Bonita. And I'm sure some of you have probably heard that. And Sons da Terra, you know, they played a Pito Comboio. It was a whole thing. So great job by them, and great job by the organizers in Newark. But listen, you didn't come to listen to this podcast to hear me talk about my weekend. You came to hear about Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football. And again, I'll be talking about a big three national team all coming up, as well as the managers. But before I do, let me just start. Congratulations to Bernardo Silva and Ruben Dias for winning the Champions League with Manchester City. Major celebrations in Manchester, England earlier this week when they returned from Istanbul. I had a chance to actually watch their plane, these plane spotting channels on YouTube, and a lot of people were waiting for them at the airport, and they were coming in on one of those huge 787s, and it was just it was a lot of fun to see two Portuguese players being celebrated like that, and you could tell those players are very well respected by the English fans. Congratulations also to Estrela Amadora and Lenk Vilaverdense. Estrela Amadora won the playoff with Marítimo. So Estrela Amadora next year will be playing in the first division after a 14-year absent. They went under something like 14 years ago with issues financially, I believe. They came back, same name, different organization, and after so many years, they are back in the first division. So congratulations to everybody in the region of city area of Amadora, Estrela Amadora there in the Lisbon area. And they, of course, are going to be playing in the first division next year. It's the third straight season, by the way, where in this 16th place first division versus the third place of the second division has come out on top and eliminated the first division team. Of course, this year, Estrela Amadora. Last year was Chaves. And the year before that was Arouca. So very interesting how the second division clubs. And I'm not surprised because teams at the bottom of the first division in Portugal are really struggling, whereas clubs in the top of the second division are pretty strong. Granted, they're playing the second division with much smaller budgets. They're a little bit stronger than I think most people give them credit for. So I can't say that I'm entirely surprised. But congratulations to the two, of course, Estrela Amadora. And because of Marítimo being eliminated, as I've talked about, of course, no Madeira clubs in the first division, no Azur clubs in the first division. That hasn't happened in 39 years since we haven't had a club from the Madeira and the Azurs in the first division since 1984, 1985. Everything will be on the domestic continent of Portugal, the domestic mainland. The biggest trip next year, I think I read, is from Gil Vicente in Barcelos to newly promoted Feirense in Faro. That's about 620 kilometers. The shorter trips, you know, and if you look at it, if you ever see a map, which I put out or in social media, you'll see that most of the clubs are clustered around the Porto area and the Lisbon area. And then you have these two teams down south in Algarve. So there's going to be a lot of short trips for teams, especially up north. I think, you know, Braga for a lot of clubs is only a 20-kilometer trip up there. And then obviously if chips make the trip south, you know, a lot of times they're going to be going to the Lisbon area. And then, of course, they've got to make those two trips as well to the Algarve, which will be their biggest trips of the season. But they're not going to be flying unless, you know, I know Braga and Porto tend to fly a lot of times down to the Algarve. So the table is set. Congratulations to Lenk Vilaverdense. What a beautiful town, Vilaverde. They are so happy. I remember them many years ago playing in the districts against my club, Atlético dos Arcos. Lenk Vilaverdense is living my dream. They are literally living my dream, and here they are now in the second division. And again, I'm happy for them, but I'm also quite jealous. And, of course, Vilaverdense beating Bissad, sending Bissad, which will go under another name next season when they merge with the Cova de Piedade, which has already happened, by the way. They've already made that announcement. But Lenk Vilaverdense is going to be playing in the second division. So a team from up north in the Minho area, another club, in the second division. So congratulations to them. That ought to be very interesting next year to see them. And of course, my other favorite club in the second division. Again, a lot of these are tied to next to my hometown, Arquistão de Alvejo, and of course, Turiense, which is the home to a lot of my family and my uncles that all live in the. So I'm also a big fan of Turiense. Next year, I'm going to be also a big fan of Vilaverdense. So I look forward to that next season. A lot of managerial changes going on in Portugal, of course. First off, I think the big one this past week is that José Gomes, who was at Marítimo, is now going to be the new manager at Chaves. He was not able to keep Marítimo up, both in terms of avoiding finishing the bottom three in the regular season. And then, of course, they went to the playoff in 16th place, and they were eliminated, as you know, by Estrela Amadora. But he gets to stay in the first division. He'll go managing Chaves. Major disappointment for Marítimo. I think I just read that Marítimo is not going to have an under-23 team next year due to the fact that you know, they're not going to be making as much money TV-wise now in the second division that they did in the first. So they're going to be cutting some budget, unfortunately. But they did, when they did get back, they did get a lot of support, though. It was a great match on Sunday. At the Marítimo match in Madeira, tons of fans. Marítimo scored that first goal, but a lot of credit to Estrela Amadora to coming back. But José Gomes, is going to be the new manager of Desportivo dos Chaves. Of course, Vitor Campelos last week left. The club wanted to renew with him. He had done a great job for them, middle of the table in Portugal, but he has some interest in going to England in the English Championship, which hasn't happened yet, but that apparently is the story. Another story among managers, Jorge Costa, remember him? The great job he did at Académico do Viseu, took over when they were near the bottom, took them all the way to the top. At one point, they were competing for second place, and then with about a month left in the season, there was apparently a falling out, and he left, and as soon as he did, Académico Viseu just went awful and wound up finishing at, if I recall, I think it was in fourth place. They were competing for promotion, and they were competing for the playoff for third place. You know, had Jorge Costa stayed, I'm convinced that they would have been either promoted or playing in the playoff for Académico do Viseu, which I still believe would have beaten Marítimo, have made it to the first division. But obviously there was a falling out and he left. Well, Jorge Costa now is going to become the new manager of Desportivo do Aves. Remember Aves? About 5-6 years ago, they won the Taça de Portugal, beating Sporting after Sporting, you know, only a few weeks after the Alcochete attacks. And Aves is back. If you remember that summer, they qualified for Europe winning the cup, but they didn't go because they didn't have resources, and they decided not to go, and that's how Sporting got into the direct entry into the Europa group stage that season. But Desportivo do Aves is basically merging with Vila Franquense, and that's how Aves is going to be in the second division next year, simply because they're merging with Vila Franquense, and since Vila Franquense finished in the middle of the table, their name is now going to be Aves, and now Jorge Costa will be back in the second division managing Desportivo do Aves. Other news we had in the second division, Helder Cristóvão, of course, I remember him when he used to play for Benfica and the Portuguese national team as a defender. He also managed Benfica B for a while, and then I think he went to manage for a few years in the Middle East, made good money. He is renewed as the manager. He stays on as the manager of Penafiel. They're very happy with the work that he has done, so he's going to be staying up north managing Penafiel. We saw other news, Pedro Ribeiro. You might remember them, Pedro Ribeiro. He was the manager of Bissad a few years ago. Remember there was like a tunnel incident in the Jumoad when Bissad was playing their matches in the Jumoad, and Pedro Ribeiro, the manager of Bissad and Conceição, apparently had some type of, there was an issue in the tunnel. Well, this is the manager. He's been around. He's a young manager. He's done a great job. He's the new manager of Leixões, so he's back in the Porto region. But he's managed, of course, in the past, Viseu. He also managed at one point Académico do Viseu and Gil Vicente in his past. Well, he's been named the new manager of Leixões. Other manager news, the big one, of course, is Jorge, and we're talking abroad here now, Jorge Jesus apparently is going to be getting a very, of course, already he's left. He won the cup with Fenerbahce in Turkey, and now the reports are, some say 10, some say 14, but he's going to go to become the manager of the Saudi Arabian national team. He said his one goal was to still manage in the World Cup, which he's never done. He's managed in the Champions League. He's managed in Europa League. He's managed them all. He's won all the different trophies in Portugal. He has been, and I know a lot of you aren't as fond of him as I am, but hey, this guy's going to make a lot of money, and he's going to probably be a manager at the next World Cup, so a very smart decision by him. Per reports, hasn't happened yet. We know he is leaving Fenerbahce, but that seems to be the reports going about JJ as I press record on this episode, and that's pretty much. And then the other big story this week is Ricardo Suarez is the new manager of a Chinese club called Beijing Guodong. So Ricardo Suarez, who was the manager of Estoril, managed to keep them up in the first division, although they really left it late, but he did manage to keep Estoril in the first division, finishing in 15th place. So he's going abroad. He was previously abroad in Egypt after he left Gil Vicente. Did not work out, came back to Portugal, and was with Estoril. Now he's going back abroad, except this time he's going to be going to China, to one of their big cities, Beijing, and he's going to be managing Beijing Guodong. So that is the first part of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. Part two of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. Welcome back, as I always do here at the beginning of the second part. I just want to say thank you again for listening. Thank you again to some of you new listeners as well. Always good to have you. And again, if you're listening to for the first time, best way to give this follow, and of course that would be on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcast, Podcast Addict, Amazon. You can also, of course, follow the audio of this as well on YouTube, on PortugueseSoccer.com YouTube account, and of course also on PortugueseSoccer.com, PSoccer.com as well, and as well as on social media. And again, whether it's for 15 minutes, whether it's for the whole time, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to listen to Portuguese football and to some of the things that I have to say of interest around the league and around players internationally as well. But let's get going. Of course, the Seleção is back. In case you're wondering, Portugal, of course, is in the Group J with Slovakia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Iceland, Luxembourg, and Liechtenstein. And Portugal right now with two wins, defeating Liechtenstein 4-0 at home and winning 6-0 away at Luxembourg. They are in first place in the group with 6 points after two matches. Slovakia is in second place with 4 points. Bosnia-Herzegovina and Iceland are tied for third with 3 points each. Luxembourg in fourth place with one, and Liechtenstein, which to no surprise, with the minus 11 goal differential already, sits in last place. And the big schedule, of course, is Portugal on Saturday. They will be taking on Bosnia-Herzegovina in Stadio de Luz. Let me confirm that. I'm pretty sure it's Stadio de Luz. That is correct. Stadio de Luz, 1945 Portugal time. And that's going to be the match. And again, Portugal has not lost their first two matches. If they could come out, take care of business, and win these two grub matches with 12 points, they will at least be assured of, very comfortably at this point, of probably going to be a top two finish for them. But obviously they want to win the group, because that all has an effect on FIFA rankings and draws and things of that nature. Well, Portugal is going to be playing at home against what I still think is the second best team in this group, Bosnia-Herzegovina. Iceland will be at home to Slovakia. That's a very good match, because both of those teams are also trying to finish in second place. And then the other one, Luxembourg, will be at home against Liechtenstein on Saturday. That's the earlier match. That's going to be played 1400 Portugal time. The other two matches in this group, including Portugal, Bosnia-Herzegovina, will be at 1945 Portugal time. That's about 2:45 in the Northeast, Canada and the USA. Portugal, again, they have a good history against Bosnia and Herzegovina. Bosnia-Herzegovina, let me just give you a big bit of a review of them. Their top player up top, he played in the Champions League last weekend, for Inter Milan against City. And that's, of course, their striker up top, Duzic, who plays for, again, Eden Duzic, D-Z-E-K-O. I probably didn't say it right. Obviously, 128. This will be his 128th cap this weekend. A very, very experienced striker. Somebody that knows how to play in the big matches. And Portugal's got to be very, very careful with them if they want to avoid any disappointments whatsoever. This is a team that, again, has a lot of experienced players. Sheffield United's Anil Amazovic is expected to start, as well as Miralem Pjanic, who now plays in the United Arab Emirates. He should feature in the central midfield. But this is a team that doesn't scare you. You probably don't hear them a lot, but they tend to have players that are scattered for some of the bigger clubs in Europe, as we've seen with Inter Milan. So they're going to be playing in the Luge. They're going to be motivated. Let's not forget the last time we played in the Luge, or one of the last times, against Serbia, and how they came in and disappointed us. So we've got to pretty much avoid that. As far as my starting 11 for Portugal, I don't think it's a surprise, and I may change it depending on the training session on Friday. But my opinion right now, I'm going to go with Diego Costa as goalkeeper. Some people are saying Patricio, but I'm going with Costa. In the back, of course, no surprise, Antonio Silva, Ruben Dias, Danilo, and Diego Dalot. I'm not going to take Danilo out there. Excuse me. I'm going to go with Pep of Porto. So I'm going to go in the back, Silva, Dias, Pep, and Dalot. In the midfield, I don't think it's much of a surprise. João Paulinho, I think, is going to get the start Bruno Fernandes and Rafael Guerrero. And then up top, you'll also have, of course, the Euro Champions League champion, of course, Bernardo Silva, as well as Cristiano Ronaldo, who will get the start. And then the question is it, I think, my understanding is Gonçalo Ramos on Thursday, as I'm heading into Friday and pressing record on this episode. He did not train as a precaution. What that could mean is that we'll probably see João Félix play up top with Cristiano Ronaldo and Bernardo. And then that probably means maybe they hold off Gonçalo Ramos for the Iceland match. Right now, I'm going to call it as João Félix will be starting up top only because of the precaution with Gonçalo Ramos. But again, I'm going to go with Diego Costa, Silva, Diaz, Pep, Dalot, João Palhinha, Bruno Fernandes, Rafael Guerrero, Bayern Munich, Rafael Guerrero, and then Bernardo Silva, Cristiano Ronaldo, and João Félix. And again, if Portugal scores early and they turn this into maybe some people are predicting 2-0, I'm thinking more like 3-1 is the score that I'm kind of thinking about for this week. I just don't think, I don't think this is going to be a match like playing Luxembourg or Liechtenstein. I just don't really see that happening. But that's really my opinion. And then heading into the second match against Iceland, my understanding with Iceland is I think they've already changed. I think Iceland has already changed managers. I'm looking here through my papers. And when I was doing my research, they got a gentleman named Age Harad, who's now in charge for Iceland. Of course, Iceland was a terrific story at the 2016 Euro. They drew with Portugal in the group stage, if you remember. And then they went on to eliminate in the knockout stages England. They also performed very well in, I believe it was Russia in 2018 in the World Cup. And Iceland is basically playing Slovakia at home on Saturday, and then they're playing Portugal at home on Tuesday. So Iceland has an opportunity here, because their really dream is for second place, to do some real damage in this group with these two home matches. They got to take advantage of it. There's no doubt about it. And again, while I don't think they've played too well in the last two championships and qualifiers, this is still a team that obviously going off of their success 2016 and 2018 that I think you need to be very careful with. Iceland hasn't beaten Slovakia in a very long time, and I don't think Portugal's played outside of that draw at Euro 2016. I think Portugal's played Iceland twice, and both times they were wins. So Portugal's had their numbers. But I don't want to believe in the past history simply because this is a different Iceland team. I mean, Iceland gets the story because it's a beautiful country. The population is not very big. And the fact that they can produce a team that could compete in Europe is impressive enough to begin with. But this is not, while this is a very good Iceland team, this is a team that Portugal should take care of business and win and go to Reykjavik, play, and then players starting on Tuesday night could start going on a vacation, for many of them, a well-deserved vacation when they go into, of course, the summer months. And, of course, that will be taking place on Tuesday. And as far as my lineup for that, again, it all really depends on Friday's training session and, whether or not anybody gets hurt in the match against, on Saturday against Bosnia. But I think I still see Paulinho getting the start against Bosnia, but I think Ruben Neves will then get the start against Iceland. I would not be surprised if maybe Patricio gets the start against Iceland. And up top, again, if Gonçalo Ramos doesn't play against Bosnia, I could see Gonçalo Ramos getting the start up in the up top against Iceland. And I think the last time, if you remember, from the first match to the second match between Liechtenstein and Luxembourg, obviously the competition was weaker. We saw Roberto Martinez make a lot of changes, and I think he's going to do that between 1 and 2. On the other hand, if Portugal does trip up on Saturday against Bosnia, then I think you won't see Roberto Martinez maybe make so many changes on Tuesday and maybe really stick to the team. Because the goal that you want to do if you're Roberto Martinez, who, by the way, has never lost a Euro qualifying match as a manager, by the way, is you want to wrap up this group right away. You win this weekend, both of these matches, and you get 12 points. You're going to be at least 2 points ahead of Slovakia, and then you still got to play Slovakia. Portugal actually goes to Slovakia in September. the first match they play in September, and you have a chance right then and there to wrap up this group. And I've talked a lot about how I like to see certain players like Celtic Xhota get into the mix for the national team. When you get to October, in my opinion, when you start getting into October and November, if Portugal has the group wrapped up, or at least a good advantage, you can start taking your chances with younger players. And I like to see that. And in order for that to happen, they got to win these two matches coming up here in this international break. So, again, both matches are 19:45 time in Portugal. I think they're playing an hour early, later in Iceland. But when it comes to Portuguese time, both of these matches are at 19:45. And again, really looking forward to seeing these two matches played. Last June, Portugal, I think, played and tripped up at Switzerland last year. And that's the reason why they didn't qualify to the Nations League. Let's hope Portugal doesn't have any June surprises this year. In my opinion, let's hope that that doesn't happen. Let's continue here and talk about the Big Three report and Braga, talk about rumors and things of that nature. Let me start off first with Braga. Big announcement this week that they have bought Bruma from Fenerbahce for $6.5 million. Bruma's done a terrific six-month loan when he joined the club back in January, and he had a terrific 6 months with Braga, scoring some goals, assisting, but really just doing a great job on the pitch for them. And he's going to continue on in Portugal, and that's great news if you are a Braga fan. Also, Braga renewed with Castro for one more season. Ricardo Horta does not appear to be going anywhere. And there doesn't seem to be any of the, Al Masrati is most likely going to be sold this summer. There's been talk of a possibility of $30 million. But the question is he's not one of those big time players that could, I think, command $30 million, because, you know, he's not necessarily, you know, the big European giants aren't going after Masrati that would have the $30 million easy for a deal. It's mostly your mid-table clubs in the Premier League, even though they're very rich. A lot of them don't have a history of spending that much money. Neither does it happen in Germany or France or Spain. So, but Al Masrati, again, the goal is to sell him for $30 million this summer. We'll see if, in fact, that happens. Moving on to the Big Three, we'll start off first with Sporting. Pedro Neto was linked this week with Sporting, possibility of going to Sporting in order to basically rejuvenate his career after so many injuries these last 2 years with Wolves, but report came out and basically rubbished the report. Despite that, you know, I still think there might have been some possibility there. Again, a lot of people get angry at me when I sit there and I say that they got to be told about this Pedro Neto story. Maybe it was the agent that offered it to Sporting, and maybe Sporting was receptive to it but didn't want the information to be out there. But whether or not you think it's trying to use the information against another club with rumors or whatever, I don't know. I just don't know if a newspaper like Record is going to put out that news unless somebody whispers in their ear the news. So I may be wrong, but let's put this up on the bulletin board as a possibility. I wouldn't be surprised if this possibly comes back again later this summer. Obviously, the big talk with Sporting has been Goya Kirsch, who's a player with Coventry, and Coventry wants something like $20 million for him, which even he said he was surprised, simply because, you know, he's in his final year of his contract. So, but he continues to be linked with Sporting, and the question is will that in fact happen? But as of now, it happens. Rochinha, of course, if you remember last summer, he came over from Vitória Guimarães. If you remember the story, Pepa left Vitória Guimarães last summer, the manager, because he was upset at how many players were leaving the club, and he wanted the club to do a better job to keep them. And Rochinha was one of those players that I think Guimarães wanted, but he wanted to move on to a bigger club. And he's been at Sporting. He has not received a lot of time. One will say that his first year has been somewhat, based on the fact that he hasn't played a lot and contributed, a disappointment if you take account minutes. But apparently he's looking for a new opportunity. He's going to be moving on. Giovanni Cabral, who again, when we came back from the break after the pandemic, if you remember when we finished the season at June, July, and August, Giovanni Cabral was the best player that summer when we finished the final 10 matches of the season. He had a great year when they won the Liga title, what scored some big goals for them off the bench late in matches, but he's had some injuries, and he's never quite, you know, when you think about Sporting and their ability to constantly use their players to try to do something. And, you know, when you talk about Sporting, they lost players, yes, but this was a guy that was at times waiting to play, and he never played. But apparently Giovanni Cabral might have some interest from Spain, from Valladolid. So we'll see if that happens. We know Thiago Tomás is not going to be staying at Stuttgart. They are not activating his clause purchase option. Another story that came out this week, not really a surprise. This sounds like it came from an agent, and that is that Marcus Edwards, his release clause right now is 60. The club wants to raise it to 80. Obviously, if you're Marcus Edwards, the talk is that he wants to go back to England. And in order for him to do that, if he's got an 80 million release clause, that's just going to make it more difficult. And look, Marcus Edwards has talent. Has he done enough, other than a few good performances in the Europa League or the Champions League, to warrant even 60 million? I don't think so. And I think that's probably the reason why they're trying to keep it at 60, because they want to make it in a position where clubs, if they want them, will be able to pay, because 80 million is a little bit more, of course, than 60. But that's been the story with Marcus Edwards. And, of course, Sporting, as we all know, I think this is a big season for them. You know, they sold Ugarte, which is going to be announced officially on June the 1st. Apparently, the story is that they will not be selling anybody anymore. They don't want to destroy the rhythm of the team. Well, we'll see what happens with that. But that's your Sporting report. Porto, occasional reports on Diego Costa getting Manchester United interest. Manchester United fans, you know, again, it's like Ugarte is, you know, get so excited. And whenever you search social media, you'll see fans just salivating for him. And sometimes, like I always say, you wonder how much Portuguese football has seen. I mean, look, Diego Costa is the real deal. He's going to be sold for a lot of money as one of the top Portuguese goalkeepers. There's no doubt about it. But is Manchester United the right club for him? We'll see, but there's always stories. Manchester United fans are really hungry to see them go to their club. We saw some news this week, Tereme and AC Milan. Of course, Tereme, a lot of people feel it might be a good time to sell and get a good value of him. Bema Porto, for financial fair play regulations, need about 50 million in sales before the end of this month of June. I think you could probably get a good 20 to 25 million just with Tereme. So we'll see what happens with that. Fran Navarro is being linked with Porto again. We'll see if that happens. But that was a story right before the international, before the transfer window closed back in January, that Porto was going to get Fran Navarro. And you wonder if maybe the reason why Fran Navarro hasn't been announced yet is because Porto needs to sell. They need to sell players, not just for financial fair play, but they need that money as well to eventually pay off, you know, Gil Vicente and Fran Navarro. Otavio costs 40 million right now. I think that's a good one. But if he does not sold after July the 15th, he goes up to 60. And the question I have, if you're not buying him for 40 until July the 15th, who's going to buy him after July the 15th for 60 million? So I think that's a very important decision day for Octavio, July the 15th, because it's just going to be harder for him to leave after that. Verón, he was in the news this week talking about how excited he was that he wants to be a big part of the season. But reports are that he got injured on vacation playing with some friends, and that he might face some disciplinary action. That is a no-no. When you go on vacation, clubs want to see you on the beach, maybe take you the photos of your toes with the sunrise. They want to see the photos with you and your lovely wife or girlfriend. They do not want to hear stories about you doing anything to possibly get hurt. And there's a possibility that Verón is going to be in big trouble. Not to mention that if he's hurt, what kind of injury and how long it was going to be. And again, as I press record on this episode, I don't have that information right now. Moving on to Benfica news. There's been a lot of Benfica news this week. Henrique Araújo, you remember him last year. He went to Watford on loan. Looks like he's going to be going on loan again. Which, by the way, what does that mean? Well, that means that there is no room for you in this new Benfica under Roger Schmidt. And if you're Henrique Araújo, you've got Jota did at Celtic, but your club where you can go and be successful. And I think if you're in Enrique Raj, I think you need to do that. Bernardo Silva was asked at the press conference for the national team about would he return to Benfica. And he said, look, it's not possible right now. He plays for City. He's being linked with Barcelona. Where's Benfica going to get the money to bring him in? It's just not realistic. And he right away told the press about that was not realistic right now. Why a Portuguese reporter would ask that, I don't know, but that's just for headlines. Gonçalo Ramos, latest word, is being linked with PSG. Benfica will only sell him for the minimum of 80. Gonçalo Ramos, PSG, is that a good fit? We'll see. But again, that's the story. Rafa, he's entering the final year of his contract. Benfica wants to renew, but apparently the issue is salary. Roger Schmidt also wants him to stay this season, even though he's entering into his final year. I mean, Benfica could potentially make some good money off of him this summer, but he's considered to be untouchable, is the word that the media use, and they want him to stay. And we'll see if Rafa does stay, but he's got to renew. Otherwise, I think he will be sold this summer. Gattu, the Turkish international, of course, did sign with Benfica, 25 plus 5, 150 million. Release clause gets Rui Costa's number 10. Goalkeeper, looks like Vlaku Dimos will continue as the number one next season. Look, if it's not broken, why fix it? Good run in the Champions League, won the Liga. Why would you make a big change? But there's a Brazilian goalkeeper from Atletico Paranaense named Bentu that's in the mix to come in and compete with Vlaku Dimos for the number one position. Otamendi renewed last week until 2025. That's a very smart decision. Youngster Cher Nadur is being linked with PSG. He could go there on a free. Tati Castellanos, the former New York City striker, he's also in the rumor mill for Benfica. Again, depends on which media you read. Some rubbish it, others say it's going to happen. Well, as I press record on this episode, nothing has happened as well. So that is your big three report. One other note in Portugal that I want to say before I finish this episode. Portugal women are going to be playing England on July the 1st before they go to the World Cup in Australia, New Zealand. So the Portuguese women's national team continues to not only just do a good job of playing very strong opponents, to continue to raise their level of play. They got a good group of players, but they want to create new stars in Portugal and have little girls fall in love with them. And the way you do that is you got to compete against the best to create future stars and hope more people play in Portugal. And that wraps it up. No news about my club in Arcos, Atlético dos Arcos. They are on break. They, of course, are looking for a new manager. And again, when Lenk Vilafredense was promoted to the second division, that was literally my dream. Literally my dream. I'll root for what I want with Atlético dos Arcos through Vilafredense and Turiense. But Atlético dos Arcos is on break. They don't begin the season until the middle of September. So no news to talk about them this weekend. Anyway, folks, I'm going to wrap up episode 175 of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. As always, thank you for listening. And as always, please take care of yourselves. Please take care of your families. Enjoy the Portugal-Bosnia, Portugal-Iceland matches. And I'll talk to you next week. Ciao, everybody.